That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hi, Weird.
I would love to, but besides the fact that my name is Sir Weirdington Esquire, I am also, I come with a hat in hand, so to speak. I have neither hat nor hands, being for the purposes of our fiction and jukebox, but actually, in seriousness, I would like to offer an apology and a retraction from last episode. I was not in the best mood when we began recording, and as we shall cover again into this episode's recap, man, oh man, was I miffed? Did this old lib get triggered? I'm just kidding. Fuck liberals. From last week's offering, got overheated and said and implied some things that firmly go against my core values. And I would like to do something terribly, like, actually physically painful and a bit controversial. I would like to apologize directly to Somber. Regardless of whether or not he's listening, it doesn't matter. The type of thing that I implicitly threatened to do to you is not an acceptable thing to threaten. It is not an acceptable, like, concept to leverage over a person, even though my intent was to hopefully instill in the hypothetical Somber I understand this person to be, or at least the person who wrote the words that we covered last week to be, instill in them a sense of what it feels like for a lot of women, for vulnerable people, to have that kind of threat lingering over them. Have that kind, the possibility of that imposition put on them, even for the purposes of, like, an ill-conceived exercise and trying to spark some ember of empathy, for a kind of terror, that other people have to suffer. It was not acceptable. And so I apologize to Somber and you, the listener, for losing my temper and resorting to that kind of behavior and thinking. I will endeavor to not do so again. For if anyone's sake, my own. Because I try to live up to my own values.
And I think that's very big of you. You weird. But yeah, so, without that out of the way, what did we learn last week?
Blackjack was once again in one of her characteristic pity parties. you Blackjack! Every time you commit some atrocity or another, you have one of these little pouts. That was as best as I can recall. That was the bulk of the chapter, with a little bit more side exposition sprinkled in. The party disbands, Blackjack taps into some of that orb, feeds her continuing spiraling orb addiction, and this is the one that got under my skin. Apparently, Morton Pone, known to the actual work as Deuce.
Doof or Doofus.
Yeah, it was originally known as Doof. A wacky Sheldon sitcom character. Oh boy. Gosh and golly. What's that, ma'am? Oh, I should rape her to really start a relationship? Well, I guess.
Grotesque, horrifying, childish. Like this seems to be kind of a childish conception of how a rape might be justified. Like Deus, okay, evil big bad is a rapist, not surprising, but that, like, he was a oh gosh Gomer Pyle kind of goofus who
who did him an accident when he did that rape. Moreover, raping a close friend. Moreover, because she confessed that she's gay. Moreover, while she's mourning the death of a previous lover. Like, horrific. Unacceptable. I don't apologize for anything else I've ever said about some, save for, like, my immediate emotional reaction to that particular sweet, sweet orb.
It's frankly embarrassing that, like, anyone, like, likes this work when this kind of stuff happens in it, but it's largely because it's papered over, because, like, it's important to note, too, framing of this is not largely the atrocity committed by Doofus. It's how unfair it was that he was held accountable for his actions and arrested and sent to prison for doing so. Because of the complex extenuating circumstances around why the rape happened, he should be forgiven for it. And that's the part that's disgusting and gross and heinous.
Yeah. Pyle, did you rape that woman? Oh, gosh, Sarge. Yeah. Oof. Anyway, yeah. So we continue the pity party. Blackjack is on the verge of putting a bullet in her brain when dream, a dragon's come to rescue you from the plot cul-de-sac. You've written yourself into a corner, and so a dragon comes to save the day.
Yeah, big old dragon. Rawr, 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 rawr.
Shows up to prevent the suicide and redirect the plot. Spike the baby dragon from the original series has grown up into a big old plot convenience.
He's now a big old flying hot dad.
To come tell Blackjack that he has discovered a way to save the wasteland, and he needs this violent murderer to help this self-destructive black-pilled psychopath to make the plan go off.
Apparently. Oh boy. Well, I think that's a good lead into our next chapter, but what perk did we earn from the suicide episode? She actually got two, because sometimes that happens. She gets one normal.
Oh
one
man,
for muddling.
She pitied herself so hard. She brooded so intensely. The XP multiplier went through the roof.
I don't know. Yeah, she got drama XP. Clearly for good role playing. She got, I believe it's called weapon handling, which gives you like allows you to carry heavier weapons without negatives with her telekinesis. Which doesn't really matter. The more slightly more interesting from a narrative perspective is Star Touched, which I need to actually look at what it does. It's the fucking okay. So Star Touched, it happens because she prayed to the stars and
yeah, she looked up to the stars and wished for death.
Yeah, and the stars in this setting are basically like Eldritch nightmares that just like. They're basically like in FOE they're dark gods that are capricious and may help or may harm you at their own will and discretion. But the actual benefits from it are the Dream Crusher perk, which is hilarious because we roll back all the way up to chapter one when I was really originally doing this to Weird specifically and not to the audience about the perk. Weird's first guess was the Dream Crusher perk, which I think is really funny to me.
Because I have a special emotional connection to the Dream Crusher perk. Please, go watch. Guys, listen to episode one.
Yeah. But yeah,
I even
so
did
she...
fan art of that character. Like, I gave him a big fro in addition. Like there's a... I think the premise of the comic was like some sort of radiated monster like charging him down and just losing steam and like just losing the enthusiasm for like the
point?
In the light of his piercing gaze.
But yeah, it works at all ways mechanically as if it was the Dream Crusher perk, which I thought was kind of a funny like huh, that's kind of neat. Anyways, now we're on to chapter 24, Hell of a Night.
Well, we've come full circle. Welcome to the last episode.
I wish. Oh, man, we still have so much more bottom to cave into.
You thought we'd hit rock bottom? No, baby, this is an excavator.
Yep. It never stops. It's bottom of the barrel all the way down.
Just needed to attach the new drill tip. It's diamond studded.
This chapter sucks, but not for the usual reasons of, like, horrible rape monster sucks. This sucks primarily because it's a ton of backstory filler. So strap in yourself for all the deep lore.
I am so very excited.
Are you?
Because I'm not. Oh boy.
So this chapter starts off with Spike, like, showing off his humble abode because he's now living in a cave high above the cloud cover, and he's like, here's a bunch of technology that I've scavenged over the years. They walk by a smoking crater that used to be an enclave pony. Which is a thing that happens from Fallen Equestria. And then he shows off his giant supercomputer, and he's like, here is my Crusader super mainframe. It allows me to observe all of the wasteland pretty much all at once through the power of these floating bot sprites. And it's what I've been using to keep tabs on people. And then he, like... And it gets backfilled in this, which is frustrating, that, like, Golden Blood was part of this getting created, which I hate. And we also learn an annoying plot detail is that initially, Golden Blood was super against the war and the ministry is being created, because that way he's more forgivable when we get to the point where he eventually, like, when the whole conspiracy, like, comes apart. Later in the story, it's sort of the complicated thing of making a character who's like, oh, I have to go to war. Like, we had to exterminate these people because it was my duty to my country.
Yeah, no, sure. Like, look, I had a lot of Jewish friends. Like, the Jewish community was very important to me. But when the time came around that we had to resort to the last, to the final solution, well... what could I do but specifically organize it?
it's a frustrating have your cake and eat it too sort of situation where Golden Blood is secretly responsible in the story for
it's disavowal. Like, it's another
I mean, it's disavowal.
Like, hey kids, hey fascist watchers at home, here's another Weird and Fi bring you another crypto watch tip.
They know it's wrong, so they have to pretend like it's wrong. But they still kind of secretly want it to be real. It's like when you get that kid who's like, "Well, I just think Hitler was super interesting. He did a lot of bad stuff, but I think it personally, like, his life was really fascinating." That kind of person is always should be sort of a suspect in this day and age. But yeah, it's the complicated thing of making him sort of forgivable, but at the same time, like, responsible for all the atrocity committed, because, you know, he helped create every single one of the ministries, but he was against them initially, but it was his duty to the princess to maintain these things. It gets much dumber later on, but, like, this is just another one of those things. Like, a lot of this is about Golden Blood, so I'm not going to cut away to go, like, and this is why it sucks, because Golden Blood's related in this particular chapter, so I'm just kind of bringing all to the front. Anyways, then I get to explain the Spike's plan for saving the waste, because he's like, well, this super mega frame is also built to purge, taint, remove radiation, clear up things, make land more sustainable, and food be able to, like, grow on it properly. It's called the Gardens of Equestria. It's the magic bullet that can save the wastes. And we learn that, like, the reason he hasn't used it yet is because the only power source that will run it are the Elements of Harmony. And the problem with that is that the Elements of Harmony need bearers to be able to use the powers of the Elements of Harmony. And the issue with that is that the wasteland is such an apocalyptic hellscape that people don't have friends anymore. So there's no one that's applicable. This is a plot detail from FOE, obviously. Which is why I'm kind of singing its praise. But I love the idea that Spike... Like, I like the idea that Spike, as Watcher, is not helping people necessarily, because he wants to help people, but because he's combing for people that might have the right virtue criteria.
That he can harvest to put into his engine.
Well, yeah.
I mean, this also leads back to, like, oh, so when times are at their toughest, like, community, like, fails to form, and, like people, like, don't, like, have a shared connection over mutual hardship, like, enemy mine is like, the most fantastical thing about that is the idea that two warring factions can, like, come to, like, know each other and cooperate, not the alien business. Like, this actually kind of reminds me of I recently was reminded of / found out about a, like, 1997 movie called The Postman, which on the face of it has a profoundly interesting premise, which is a thing that would exist in a post-apocalyptic scenario. Somebody who says, yeah, I'm a mailman, because, like, in times of feudal, when, like, people have built walls, like, to keep out, like, the miles and miles of miles and miles of God knows what, and raiding bands, messengers are more valuable than gold. that's the main reason you don't shoot the messenger. It's blasphemous. Everybody needs the messenger. And so the idea of a post-apocalyptic mailman is a deeply interesting concept, but from the trailer, it's presented in an intensely jingoistic way. Like, the trailer hammers home again and again, oh man, if only we just had America back. The real problem here is that people have forgotten about America. And that your noble stand at insisting upon being a member of the United States Postal Service will remind people of their civic duty to America. And that's why you're justified in killing every last one of them, Mr. Postman.
Godspeed, Mr. President.
But just the jingoistic fervor over the, like, institutional premise of a postman, as opposed to, like, the practical, like,
the actual action of being a postman.
Yeah, everybody in the setting of that fucking movie, like, it seems to regard the notion of a mail carrier as a outpost-to-outpost messenger as being entirely frivolous and insane, as being preposterous. And, like, one of the scenes for the trailer is, I'm putting a bounty on every postman!
That's fucking insane.
And so, like, that notion of, like, this simple service that human beings need being something that would dry up with the collapse of, like, major institutions, it's just really funny and dumb to me. It only now, like, we've made the joke, the land that friendship forgot, like, a bunch of times, but only now has it finally been made crystal clear to me, thanks to the postman. I think it's finally clicked in my brain how dumb that premise is, how incredibly stupid the idea that in the wake of the end of the world, like, that, like, people would, like, stop connecting to each other.
Well, I think the part I would fight you on is the fact that it is in fact a story.
Yeah, and, like, so I will accept that in the original narrative, based on what you've told me about it, based on my understanding of it, it's a good metaphor. Like, it doesn't make practical sense, but it makes sense for the purposes of the story that, like, the broken state of the world is a reflection of the broken state of people's relation to each other. That the real reason the wasteland exists is not because of the bombs. The bombs were merely symptomatic of a deeper problem, which was people not being able to trust each other.
Yeah, lack of friendship and communication between two people.
And so in the first story, made all the sense in the world, everything about Project Horizons leads me to believe that the author is convinced that, that's just the fact of the matter. It was the bombs that did it. It's a mechanical thing of the setting, and it is entirely plausible to this author that in the event of the destruction of society and
mass crippling hardship on the part of everyone, no one would be able to, like, trust would die. Like there'd be no reason, no mm-hmm. cause for friendship.
Trust would die, and that's a good thing, is the kind of tone that PH unfortunately presents. But yeah, so then a huge chunk of the original FOE is about trying to figure out who has those virtues that like Watcher is looking for to try and fix the wasteland. And we're kind of left on a sort of like we know that it works, but we don't know, like, we never get the actual answer of like who exactly those people, like, not all of the people who it exactly is. It's kind of left open, which is something I like, but it creates a lot of problems because of writers like this who aren't content with there being any sort of like mystery or vagueness within a solution. But the other point I would want to make about the Gardens of Questria, like, BJ finds it like, oh yeah, there is hope in the waste, like the world can be saved. My problem with that is like, also, so what? Like I touched on this last week about like the problem I have with this kind of thing, this sort of narrative correction of depression, is that it's just way too big. Like, it doesn't make sense to me how that matters to Blackjack. Because she also, in this part, gets kind of told, like, oh yeah, also, like, you and your friends aren't good enough to be, like, you don't even come close to be able to be the kind of friends that, like, could be part of the elements of harmony. And he's not wrong about that either. Like, that's pretty obvious.
I mean, yeah. Like, see Exhibit A. They snickered behind your back while a black widow is going to inevitably poison and stab you.
Yeah. And it's the problem of, like, this makes her not want to die, basically, because the author is a hack. And I hate that. It's just too, like, it's just far too big of a thing. Like, and also, it still leads into the problem that, like, Blackjack has a duty-bound sense of suicidal ideation, which means that, like, her sense of self is dependent on her ability to protect and help people. And hypothetically, this gives her, like, a reason to want to live in the most self-destructive sense. I'm going to try and save the waste by helping this project get done, but I don't care if I die still. So that doesn't actually fix anything. Like, I just hate this plot point. It's not good. But we got to get through a lot more of this shit through this chapter, so I'm gonna plot along. But just, you know, yay, BJ doesn't want to die anymore. She wants to continue the story. then we get more memory orb. Yeah, yay. Memory orb noise.
Given everything like we've established about Blackjack so far, like. This is, like, for a more self-aware author, like, once again, this could be, like, a really intriguing story of, like a follow around the foil kind of story. A, like, we're like, a villain-led narrative wherein, like, this self-hating monster is wandering the waste looking for the nicest people alive, the best, friendliest people in existence, so she can capture them, drag them to a machine, and plug them in as a battery.
That would be awesome, actually. Somebody out there in the universe, write that story.
I mean, I might. Like, I'm now fascinated by the idea, like, a like Thanos-esque monster who is, like, totally convinced of their, like, the legitimacy of their nightmarish, like, plan to better the world, and even better, with a recognition that there are people who, like, have virtues that they do not.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, their twisted sort of tech daddy, like, robot, like, monster logic leads them to think, okay, I need to harvest the power of pure hearts, of kind spirits. And I actually envy these people and their capacity for empathy. And it is a terrible shame what I'm going to do to them, but I am going to break their arms and legs and put them in this giant doom engine.
Yeah.
that will re-terraform the planet.
This friendship engine. So anyways, memory orb noise, memory orb noise, memory orb noise. Yay, we get to learn about the Ministry of Awesome. The idea, I'm very neutral on it, but of course this also has to be related to Golden Blood in some way. So, backstory time a little bit. So there, you know, there's all the different six ministries. Rainbow Dash, RBD, Big Gay, Big Sky Gay. Her ministry is the Ministry of Awesome, and the kind of joke of it was that it was a ministry that didn't do anything because, like, RBD, like, didn't run it, really, and, like, it was just kind of, like, a sort of a joke on itself. But it turns out that the secret of that is that that was actually a front, and that the Ministry of Awesome was their, like, fucking covert ops, like, Marines, essentially. Like, they were the people that did all sorts of counterterrorism and insurgent work for the military. All headed by RBD, it just looked like a joke.
That is the most fucking Marine SEAL wannabe fantasy I can. I have relatives that are in the military. I very distinctly remember one Christmas dinner, in which he was like talking, like bragging about like, totally sassing. The guy giving him his interrogation training, you know, they, like, have certain limits on the ways they can, like, torture you and stuff. And, like, yeah, no, like, I totally, like, made fun of him while he was, like, beating me and, like, yeah, and stuff. Oh, yeah, so anyway, like, I'm thinking about having the word truth tattooed on my trigger finger.
Oh, boy.
Like, calling your Navy SEAL team, like, the Ministry of Awesome, and like, no, we're just frat bros, but like secretly we like, you know, fucking kill the bad guy behind enemy lines because we're like, we are the Ministry of Awesome.
Well, I didn't hate it before, but I hate it now. Ugh. Christ.
I mean, the coolest part is that like we do get to like have R&R where we like chill and just be bros. To like, for like the cover of the OPSEC.
Yeah, I mean that's basically what it is. Ministry of Awesome, my man. But yeah, but this is just another memory warp to be like, oh yeah. Also, the idea that Ministry of Awesome was their covert Marines was also Golden Blood's idea. Everything was Golden.
Oh yeah,
Blood's
naturally. Idea. Yeah, no, fucking Xanatos Kaikaku. Yeah, sure.
Golden Blood is very frustrating. As a character, there, the biggest lie that ever gets said in the story is at one point to his face, "You don't matter," because the war is bigger than you. Is the biggest lie any character has ever said to another character in a story. But yeah, Ministry of Awesome's dumb. Then we get some just regular audio files, which is a blast. It's a nice blast of not having to memory orb every goddamn detail. But it's audio files of Twilight building the Gardens of Equestria in secret with the help of Golden Blood. And the whole thing is that, like, it's another one of those kind of interesting uses of memory orbs that, like, all of the people that constructed the Gardens of Equestria don't know that exists because their minds were all erased after the construction of it, including Twilight, as it reveals, because Golden Blood's like, Twilight's like, okay, I'm gonna wipe your memory now so you don't know. And Golden Blood's like, well, actually, I'm gonna be the secret keeper and you're not gonna know. So you have plausible deniability that, like, you created, like, this thing. So there are three major problems with this. First of all, it's to fix a plot hole in the original story that isn't a plot hole. Like, it doesn't need to be a plot hole. It's just never elaborated on. There is a specific thing that Somber feels that one of the villains who knows that Twilight knew this would be able to just go and stop the Gardens of Equestria or use it or whatever, and that would be the thing they'd want to do, and therefore Twilight needs to not have remembered that this existed in the first place to fix that. But that's not a plot hole. They could just have different motivations, you know? Like, it's a stupid thing to add to the story. Second, this is also a part where Twilight makes out with Golden Blood for some reason. Of course, not only is that she makes out with him, but it's weird and awkward because Golden Blood, like, pushes her off and is like, well, you know, I don't feel about you that way. Because, you know, he's such a Chad. But yeah, Golden Blood is such an absolute goddamn Chad that he can be like, the girl that everyone in the story is sweet on? Well, no, I don't need that. I'm bigger than this. It's so masturbatory. Like,
my face, it hurts. I hope someone seeing me doesn't think I'm smiling. This is more of a rictus grin. Like, my face is seized into this shape very painfully. It's...
It's so dumb. It's unbelievably dumb. I've honestly forgot what my third point was on this subject. It's a bad, unnecessary plot hole fix. It's Golden Blood making out with Twilight Sparkle. It's gone. I don't remember what my third point was, but it was also just, I think it was more just wanking on the fact that, like, I hate that, like, oh, I remember what it is, too. I don't remember if it's this point or if it's a later point. We find out that the reason that the Guardians of Equestria got built was, you know, that stable that was, like, unfinished and killed a bunch of people? That's because all of its resources got diverted into making this place. So, that's cool to know. That's not a thing that's from the original story, but apparently we also needed to know that the Guardians of Equestria was built out of what is essentially the bodies of an entire stable, because they had to die for this to get made. That is not a detail that needed to be added, but it's just to make the whole situation way more, like, macabre and morose and you know, sacrificing the small for the many mentality. The greater good. This shit sucks. Shit sucks, feels bad. We get a bunch of them, a bunch of BJ and Spike interacting, but it's not really important. It's basically just, it's Somber jacking off the original story in a bunch of different ways, where Spike is having a conversation about stuff, about him interacting with little Pip, and basically Blackjack responding. Like, it's that thing that happens in fan fictions where, like, the self-insert character also goes, like, and also I'm here and I have an opinion. That's nothing. And it's capped off with the joke that Blackjack doesn't know that Little Pip is also the stable dweller and thinks they're two people, and that's just a running gag in it. And Spike refuses to tell her because no one tells Blackjack anything, because they're all dicks. So
just a running joke in people surrounding Blackjack's life. She hasn't put together the obvious. This has a lot of, like, practical impacts for, like, everything we're trying to do, and will possibly hurt her real bad, but it's funny.
it makes me smile, so I'm doing it. Yeah, so, by the way, this Guardian of Equestria shit has basically nothing to do with Project Horizons, by the way. It's an FOE thing. There is one detail that is related, but it won't happen until the epilogue, where I get to yell about how the epilogue turns the story from a disaster into a hilarious disaster. Anyways, BJ, like, decides to go back to her friends, because, like, something I forgot to mention in the last chapter is that she also left a suicide note with her friends that was, like, basically, like, hey, I'm gonna go, I'll meet you in Megamart if I make it back, otherwise, like, you know, go on, live your lives without me. BJ decides to go with her friends, go back to her friends after some prodding with Spike. So yay, Spike interaction's over, basically.
Does he
give her supplies actually... and stuff? What?
No, I mean, like, a direction, like a relevant thing to do, because they have been, like, what? So he just tells them about this MacGuffin and a thing that he, like, plans to eventually get around to doing something with, but, like, yeah, no, I don't have any action points for you. I don't have any actionable,
yeah,
like, thing for you to, like, for, well, any way to make any of this information meaningful.
No, yeah, okay. He basically wheeled her over and go, hey, look at this, isn't it neat?
Like, you might as well have just chucked a memory orb at her, like dive bombed her with a memory orb, like, for all that any of that mattered. Like,
well, it's because it's a cameo from the original story. She can't actually impact it in any real meaningful way. But the viewers out there might think, why include it at all? That's exactly my point. It contributes nothing to the story outside of being like, hey, remember how the original story is better than mine? And then
anyway,
then
in our fic, Spike will just drop a memory orb on her head, like Beaner from above the memory orb to impart all of this shit.
Yeah. But anyways,
go along with his day. Like, I don't know, he's got some sort of like, he might even not have to go anywhere, just like fire it out of a
cannon. It's a memory orb gun. Anyways, my notes are really sparse in this chapter, but it's because like this. Oh man, this chapter sucks. They all suck, but like, oh boy. So anyways, on her way down, she gets accosted by some Enclave ponies that are basically like, oh, it's like, well, what are you doing with the dragon? Is having a chat with him. It's like, oh, we don't trust you. We're gonna take you in for an interrogation. And luckily, Blackjack had been drinking up to that point, so she's all nice and powered up. Because I talked about this before, but alcohol is a power up for Blackjack. It gives her a bonus to her stats. Yeah, she's Pony Popeye. But yeah, she then proceeds to clown like four super decked out Enclave ponies. It's important to note about Enclave ponies. I've talked about this before, but like proper soldiers are wearing power armor, which means they're very hard to take down because they're also skilled soldiers. But, you know, Blackjack is just the god of killing, so she clowns them relatively easily. She essentially, like, she does that thing from a previous chapter where she glasses one of them with the bottle, but, like, specifically just, like, fucks up one of their visors doing it, since you're not supposed to get beer in, like, heavy machinery. And then just kind of takes one of them as a hostage and forces the other ones to just, like, piss off. Well, that happens. So they all just vacate besides her hostage, who she's now using as like a hang glider to fly her way down off the mountain. She makes a new friend. Her name is Twister, who is now stuck on the ground because of the fact, like, Enclave's stupid. Like, you can't, once you're on the ground, you have to get like clearance to get back up into the sky, or they'll just shoot you out of the sky. So she's like stuck with Blackjack for a while. So they have to like play fun buddy cop movie where neither of them trust each other, and they slowly learn to like trust each other over the course of the chapter. Twister has an unbelievably intense accent, though, which is the only thing that I really care about. We learn that like Thunderhead is apparently all prissy, like, you know, like Southern Belle kind of accents, while like Navarro, which is one of the other major cities, are like incredibly Southern, like super Texan Southern. Which I love and hate in equal measure. It's, and that characterization all comes back down to Calamity, because Calamity has an accent and sounds like a cowboy because he's a sky cowboy. That's the whole joke of him. But like, they just took that as like, that's just some characterization for everyone, in the sky and in the Enclave.
So, there's one character with this accent. Therefore, we must extrapolate that the entire Enclave is okay.
Well, it makes a little bit more sense, though, too, I guess, that, like, especially when we learn that, like, in this story, apparently the Enclave are basically the Sky Confederacy. Like, they're a bunch of, like, they're a bunch of, like, fairly racist, hate-mongering, like, independent states that are all connected together under one flag. Because we find out that Thunderhead, which is the local area, no one likes, because Thunderhead has better technology, because they're not living on a sky. They're not living on a cloud. They're living on a tower that's been retrofitted into a city that breaks cloud cover. So they have technology, they have food, they have unicorns who can make technology, and they fought for their independence, and the rest of the Enclave turned on them, and they've been like forced to demilitarize after that. So like there's a big contention. I don't know, like, fuck, I don't know why I'm talking about this. I just had a moment of like, shit, none of this matters because it's all stupid and bad. Like, this is, Somber does this all the time, but the Enclave gets a lot of this, of like, shit, boy, we need to have just the deepest lore. Like, we need to have this complex political arrangement, because like in the original story, the Enclave were just kind of sky Nazis, and like, they didn't need to be more complicated than that. There were the Pekasai were all racist because they thought that like the ground was literally beneath them, And this is like, no, we need to know, like, we need to know the complex political intrigue of the Nazis. And it's like, no, we don't. They want to exterminate us. That's all we need to know.
Like, this reminds me of, like, a half joke that I put forward in Fi's Discord of, like, you know how this happens every single fucking time? Like, some fantasy novel will feature, like, a dude from far away Astan, and everyone is like that dude. I want to build, like, a D&D supplement or whatever based on, like, some far away Astan that was mentioned in some other, like, core book, but, like, the one character we meet in there is actually hyper atypical.
Yeah, this is not your regular far away Astanian man.
Like, yeah, no, this dude is actually a weirdo by far away Astan standards. Like, he's not a representative sample.
But the only real important thing to note about Thunderhead is that, like, the general collective of Pegasus states are all, like, deeply conservative, essentially, and Thunderhead breaks away from that by just being incredibly neoliberal. It's a very centrist interpretation of, like, it's like, well, they wanted to have their own thing, and they had all the technology and stuff like that, which is why, like, we hate them, because their biggest sin is basically, like, oh, we want to, like, help the people on the, like, beneath us, and not take over everything. But they're still kind of framed as, like, but we'll take over the whole enclave to do it. And it's like, oh, cool. This doesn't, like, reek of, like, Republican rhetoric about the Democrats at all. Not even a little bit. So that's cool.
It also kind of reeks of... So a lot of, like, Ku Klux Klan apologists, and, like, you'll hear this a lot from various sort of southern Nazis, and then, like, even like out, like, sort of like Richard Spencer-esque, like, David Duke sort of types, will often bring up, like, look, we don't want to exclude anybody or do any damage to anybody, know-how. We just want the right to be left alone. Left to our own devices, not forced to conform to somebody else's cultural standards. We just want freedom. But what they leave out every single time is that their primary concern, the core freedom that they're trying to protect, is the freedom to put their boot on other people's necks. Like, that's the primary freedom that they're complaining about that's being infringed.
But yeah, just skimming through some of Twister's dialogue, she compares Thunderheaders are just half a feather above surface scum in my book, because, you know, they're just too damn liberal. There's a weird, like, it's shite. It's absolute garbage. I hate everything to do with the Enclave in this story. It's a darn mess. But yeah, they spend a huge chunk of the story, like, bonding over fighting manticores. Where they kind of like, well, I've learned to kind of tolerate you, and you've kind of learned to tolerate me, and we kind of like go on their separate ways, sort of like, not necessarily like,
oh shucks, you're one of the good ones.
Yeah, exactly. You're one of the good dirt ponies.
Ugh. I mean, I will continue to work to eradicate your vile kind, but you're all right in my book. Like, I could have dinner with you. Like, you know, I don't see anything wrong with breaking bread with you. Just, you know, the eradication of your kind.
When the genocide comes, you will get the first bullet, so that you do not have to endure the gassing that the rest of them get. It's like, oh, cool, thanks. I'll take that under consideration. Good old Sky Nazi. But in between that, they also get, like, a weird thing where, like, a, like, audio diary thing happens, but, like, as far as I understand it, like, turns into, like, a full, like, auditory visual experience, returns into, like, a dome of static that shows off, like, what's happening in the scene, as far as I can understand. It's very confusing. It's only really matters because it reinforces more stuff that we knew before. We know we find out the person who died at Star Point in the previous chapter was, like, the astronaut pony from way back, who was offered a deal to carry to term a child who was like a political figure's child that would ruin their career. And we see that kid has grown up to be Taro, and this is just before she gets sent to the stable, and Marigold, who's the name of the astronaut pony, bites the big one when the bombs drop, because they're just hanging out with Haas, the like old man with the cowboy hat that they meet in the second chapter. This isn't really like, this is fucking nothing, but it's also like, hey, more leaning more towards that shark joke. But yeah, they fight the manticores. We're almost done with this chapter. We just got one more big thing. But they make their way to Mega Mart. She reunites with the rest of her team, and they kind of do the whole thing of like, oh, we should arrest her. She's right there. And you know, Twister's come to some sort of understanding, and they all like fly away and like say like, oh, if we see you again, we'll kill you, but you're free to go this time. But on the other hand, so Blackjack makes it back to Mega Mart. Yay, Mega Mart! It's back once again. She finds out that she meets back up with one of the like doctor horses that's there. She's befriended named Bonesaw, and has a short conversation with him that's interrupted by like a trio of badass motherfucking raiders who burst into the scene, and you know, everyone's like, oh, those are Reapers, and everyone gets kind of spooked, and then they reveal they're looking for Blackjack, because of course they are. So Blackjack's given like a knife and to go deal with them, and they basically are like, hey, we got two ways we can do this. We're either gonna kill you or you're coming with us, and everyone's all like fighty, and then we get a really super long fight scene that I can kind of just get to ignore, which I'm always excited about. It's an engaging fight, but it's not worth repeating a lot of it. It's just mostly just like, it's fun to have a story where like it's so I'm gonna talk about why I don't like Reapers in a second, but it's kind of fun to have a fight where Blackjack is actually getting her ass kicked by like a significant force. But the counterpoint to this is, one of the things I really don't like in these kind of stories is that Reapers are just better combatants for literally no reason other than they have to be.
Yeah. I mean, like we sort of covered that way back in episode one or two, that like, what the fuck would make these guys any better than like, especially given they have no signs of having like the capacity for discipline, like or subtlety, and those are like the two main winning factors in war, besides like in some cases raw numbers. But even that can be overwhelmed by like you can break a larger force if you are better disciplined and have the cunning to be better positioned. Like, what the fuck advantage do these guys have except like just being like yet another masturbatory fester on the part of the author?
Yeah, the Reapers are primarily strong because they are. Like, they're the cliche of the like warrior race guys who are just, they're so, they're raiders who eat, sleep, and breathe violence. So they fight literally all the time, so that makes them skilled, which is not like,
oh, they're super high level. I get it. Okay.
Yeah, they're high level.
They have a lot of hit points because they have a lot of like level hit die. Sure.
I'm max level and you're not, so I win. Yeah, I don't like the Reapers as a narrative thing, because they're just so like, at least there was the excuse initially that their higher ups had cybernetic enhancements that made them stronger than most, which kind of still kind of makes sense in the story, especially because there's a huge emphasis on technology in Project Horizons specifically. So it would make sense that the highest echelons of them are like super, super cybered, like they're street samurais running around murdering people, but like they just are just really good fighters is the problem. Like, none of them have any training. They're just really, really good fighters, but they pants Blackjack super hard, during this fight. They beat the shit out of her. She gets a couple of good licks in, but the only real important things to come from this fight is the lead pony that she gets beamed by is the worst character in this story.
That's a hell of a measure. Like, it's actually a pretty high bar to jump. Like, all right, how the fuck do they accomplish that?
Well, let me get to it. So she is the lead pony of this is a yellow pony with a golden mane, and her Cutie Mark is a trio of butterflies, but they're all they're butterflies with wings that are chainsaw blades, like they're razor wings. This she's super haughty, and she's like really, really, really twigged and psycho. Someone calls out her name as Psycho Shy. She mugs to the crowd when people like cheer on her as she's beating the shit out of Blackjack. And she's like, oh, Blackjack's nothing. She's weak. She can't beat me anyways. And the fight only gets called off because Rampage shows up. And she's like, okay, that's enough. That's enough, Psycho Shy. You don't need to keep hitting her. And Psycho Shy is pretty steamed about like Blackjack for some reason. And then the chapter ends with Rampage being like, oh yeah, Blackjack, you've been drafted. There's a war going on now in your absence. Welcome to the Reapers. And that's how our chapter ends. I will get into it as we go along, but Psycho Shy is, with very little exception in the story, potentially the worst single character in the story, because she is the most masturbatory, self-insert, villain sue bullshit, save for Golden Blood.
They're both blondes, which might be notable. I don't know.
Yes, it is notable. She is insufferable in every scene. She's the inverse of Poochie. Every scene she's in, I keep asking myself, when is she not in this scene anymore? Because...
Is she at least in some way like a wizard or a cybernetic horror? Like, what like advantage does she have to justify like being able to like rough up a person who is steadily transforming body and soul into a gun?
She is a good fighter and a Pegasus. So this isn't the only one, but Psycho Shy is something of a dark mirror to Blackjack, which doesn't work because Blackjack is the dark mirror of Blackjack. Like, but Psycho Shy is literally what Blackjack is without any like pretense, like no pretension of trying to do good. She just likes killing people, with her sole justification of being like, you annoy me. So she's just a more honest Blackjack, really, is essentially her character. But she is the worst in no uncertain terms. It's her and Goldblood rival the spot.
I get it now. She was able to overwhelm Blackjack because she is more of a gun.
Yeah.
Blackjack still has all these weak feelings that she is yet to purge from herself, and that I predict will be her arc once she is free of more of these vestigial like cares, then she will like positive thetans, and she like has made like more room in her heart for bullets, then she will be able to beat this pretender.
Yeah, this horse pretender. Yeah, well, yeah, it's just Psycho Shy is a more pure Blackjack. Yeah, I just desperately wanted to like talk about Psycho Shy, but I know I shouldn't because I gotta save something for.
It's gonna like... yeah, spoilers. I don't know. I think so. I guess we'll leave it like. in the fix fic I'm writing, I'm not. I can't be bothered. But in the fictional fix fic that I keep referring to, it's I don't know, this character might be, given what you seem to feel like the author was trying to go for, there'd be so much more interesting as a like vicious v Spike Spiegel sort of thing. Like, the Dark Mirror character is usually interesting if they're, like, equal and opposite. Like, the interesting thing about the fight is that neither can, like, find leverage over the other. Like, whoever these other two Reapers are, they get killed pretty early, and it's just a long, painful slog on both sides.
So that's what's going to be happening next chapter. A detail I forgot is that when Psycho Shy is like, oh, you know, Blackjack isn't shit, I could have taken her with you know, two hooves tied behind my back or whatever. Rampage is like, no, no, you couldn't. She's just in a bad state right now.
Oh, fucking came at me while I was sleeping.
Yeah.
Okay.
The sun was in my eye. Yeah, sure. It's Blackjack had the negative modifier of depressed, and she like the cooldown timer hadn't like triggered, so she was still getting the negative effects of it. So she couldn't fight at full strength, and that's right. Why.
Anyway, so lend us your energy. We've got a spirit bomb to charge, and it is like at really low power. We fucking need those stars and hearts and thumbs up. You fools, your world is doomed without this positive energy, without your ratings and reviews. Everything you know and care about will be destroyed. So get on that. Fag, I understand you have a somewhat extremely horny and politically opinionated Twitter,
which are basically the same thing. Yes, you can find me at ThouArtFi on Twitter and the Mastodons, and send us your questions, your queries, and we'll try to like solve
again,
them on air.
Without these questions, your world will be destroyed. Meteor X is not far away, and we need the energy from your inquisitive spirit to repel it.
Look forward next week when we have the Thunderdrome actually literally happen next week. I think it's next week. I'm almost certain it's next week. It's either next week or the week after that. We're gonna show down in Thunderdrome.
I have a weird sensation that I like. There's a weird hole in me. There's an emptiness that says there's an excitement shaped hole in my heart. It is filled with emptiness. So I will give an ironic, yeah.
You know in your heart that should be cool, but you know in your brain there's no way Sombra could do this justice.
Oh God, Fi, I think maybe this was all a terrible mistake.